Hoosiers ordered to stay at home. Federal aid on the way. Plus, Governor Holcomb makes only his second veto in office and more on Indiana Week in Review, the week ending March 27th, 2020.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, Governor Eric Holcomb ordered all Hoosiers to stay at home for the next 2 weeks unless they're conducting, quote, essential business. That order, issued Monday, came ahead of what Holcomb calls a critical period to help curb the spread of COVID-19.
So stay home. Get groceries only when you need them, and only buy what you need.
Administration guidance says essential businesses and services allowed under the order include, but are not limited to, grocery stores, pharmacies, gas stations, police stations, fire stations, hospitals, doctor's offices, healthcare facilities, garbage pickup, public transit, and public service hotlines. Restaurant and bars will remain open too, but only to offer carryout and delivery, not in-person dining. The Holcomb administration says state police and local law enforcement are helping enforce the order, but people won't be stopped driving to work or going for a walk. The state has a hotline for businesses to ask questions about the stay-at-home order, but that's not meant for employees, even those, Holcomb says, who think they and their company should temporarily close under the order.
And so first, go to your employer, discuss it with your employer, show them what you know, if there's some misunderstanding. And if that doesn't work, then we do need to know about it. And we're going to help try to resolve it as well.
Holcomb says employees can file complaints with the Indiana Occupational Safety and Health Administration. Is the stay-at-home order too broad? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel, and we are doing things a little differently this week in order to help abide by those stay-at-home and social distancing guidelines. So three of our panelists are Skyping into the studio, but here with me in studio is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwanis, host of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly, statehouse reporter for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette, are joining us via Skype. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting statehouse reporter Brandon Smith. Ann Delaney, are there too many businesses that are considered essential?
Well, let me start by saying I think last week I said something offhanded like the legislature ought to come back in session and maybe they'd all get it. I obviously was a feeble joke. I don't want anybody to get this virus because it's so, so dangerous. But in terms of the order on stay at home, essential services obviously has something of a subjective meaning to it. And I think the governor's counting on people having common sense to know when they absolutely have to go in or when they can stay at home. We obviously have to do something to stop the spread of this virus because it's those kinds of equations you used to do in high school. I mean, this is incredible, the growth that we're having, and we don't have any idea the size of the problem because we're not testing a fraction of the people who need to be tested. So I think he's doing what he can do within the framework of a more subjective idea of what's essential. And you have to balance that. I mean, people need to feed their families, not just to go to the grocery store, but they need to be able to bring in income. And we have too many of these employees or who are not W-2 employees or who are going to be struggling to make ends meet as a result of this virus and not going to work as they would ordinarily. So I think his answer and his suggestions should be taken to heart, and I think it's as good as you can do.
Mike O'Brien, Ann just talked about the idea of having to try and balance here a little bit between the obvious health concerns while also not completely crushing the economy so that people can make some income. But she Ann used the phrase relying on common sense. Is that a dangerous thing to rely on?
Well, I mean, remember, this the order that was put out by the governor defines essential on the, as a baseline where the federal government guidance begins. States can then cater that for their local for their own circumstances, and we've seen counties around the state who are also allowed to go further if they think that their local circumstances warrant it. So I think you're going to continue to see at the local level people, the state on a statewide basis, respond to what's really actually happening here and whether people are complying. Obviously, with the carryout order, there were restaurants and bars that were not complying with that, and the governor said this week that The Alcohol Tobacco Commission is fully empowered to go in and revoke a restaurant's license altogether if they're not complying with this order. So I think when they see areas that are not in compliance or not in the spirit of and the direct orders of what is being suggested from the White House to the State House and your local courthouse, that you should stay home if you're except for only essential travel, and if you need to go to work and you're still able to and maintain those distances, then that's great. You should be able to do that.
The trick there, and you kind of got to some of this, Mike, and I'll direct this next one to John Schwannis. The trick there seems to be enforcement. Now, obviously, with restaurants and bars, the ATC can go and pull licenses. But for just people being out or for businesses closing, not closing, or forcing their employees to come in when maybe before they were having them work from home, which we have heard some anecdotal evidence of this week, is enforcement the biggest unanswered question right now as to whether or not this is actually going to work?
Well, it's certainly the most difficult part of the equation when you're talking about individuals who are in their homes or perhaps not in their homes, unfortunately. But the governor has made clear, the administration has made clear, that one thing that will not happen, at least at this point, is police will not be, state police and others, will not be stopping people asking for their papers, figuratively. This is not that draconian. And in fact, the governor has made clear that he still wants people to be able to go outside, to enjoy some fresh air, to walk the dog. And I think he even said walk the cat, which I haven't tried that with a leash yet, but maybe that's something I'll try during this crisis. So I think he's trying to be firm and logical and wise in the restrictions that he has put in place, but to do it in a way that doesn't seem to be worried that the police are going to come knocking at your door and you'll be hauled off in the middle of the night and put in some locked hospital ward. So I think it's that fine balance.
Now, Nikki, today we got a little more of an update from the governor and the state health commissioner about the latest numbers, some demographic information. But Dr. Chris Spox, the state health commissioner, also told us when she thinks this will sort of peak for Indiana, which could play a role in whether this stay-at-home order goes beyond April 6th and 7th.
Yeah, she said that they've done some modeling and she sees a peak around mid to late April. I saw a secondary national group who said the peak should be April 14th. So she thinks we're currently still in kind of the calm before the storm. I think we'll know a lot more after next week. And the governor just said he's going to take it day by day before deciding whether to extend this.
Well, time now for viewer feedback. Each week, we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, was Governor Eric Holcomb right to issue a stay-at-home order? A yes or B no? Last week's question, is Indiana right to postpone its May 5th primary election until June 2nd? 80% of you say it was the right call, while 20% say no. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, the White House and Congress this week struck a deal on a $2 trillion COVID-19 relief package that includes direct payments to Americans, an expansion of unemployment insurance, and billions in aid to large and small businesses. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell says the aid package helps meet an unprecedented crisis in American history.
This is not even a stimulus package. It is emergency relief.
The bill is headlined by direct payments to Americans, $1,200 to individuals up to a certain income level, plus $500 more for each dependent child. It will also increase unemployment benefits by $600 a month. The current monthly average payment is only a little more than $300. The package also includes billions for research into vaccines, personal protective equipment for healthcare workers, and medical supplies. Mike O'Brien, it's hard to imagine asking this particular question of a $2 trillion bill, but does it go far enough?
Yeah, everything's relative to your current circumstances, right? A month ago, Congress was fighting over billions and not hundreds of billions. They're fighting now, last week, they fought over whether this should be a $1 or $2 trillion package. We're going to find out. I remember the goal of this is the goal of local and federal stimulus, delays in tax remittance and all of this is that right now no one's thinking long term. You're thinking, can I get to the end of the week? And cash is king in the economy right now. and they've got to infuse it with capital, because if they don't, basically we're trying to buy the economy for a month is what we're trying to, do to get past the surge, get past the peak of the curve, ensure that, we get back underneath hospital capacity for people that are getting sick and are getting very sick. We're going to deal with this for a long time. We know that. The real issue is preserving hospital capacity so the sickest patients can be treated, and infusing into the economy large amounts of cash so the businesses and wage earners can continue to survive. So these small businesses can survive, small and large, you know, from airlines to your small town restaurant. So that was the goal of this package, but it all depends on how long it takes, on whether or not we can flatten the curve for long enough to get under capacity in the healthcare system. But if we're sitting here in a month or in 2 months when tax bills are due again, and people are having to figure out where to scrape cash together to make those payments, or to pay their mortgage or the rent payment at their small business, we're gonna find out. So hopefully this is the first and only stimulus. But again, it just all depends on how long this lasts.
Yeah, and is that the biggest issue right now? Is that, does it go far enough? Yes, for right this moment, but there's still a big outstanding question.
There's so many unknowns that it's impossible to predict. Obviously, they had to do that to avoid a depression. I think we're going to have a recession anyway. The question is, do we go into a depression or not? And I think the direct payments to individuals are good. They may need to go further with that than they have. I'm a little bit concerned about the safeguards on having corporations keep the employees, for example, as a result of getting these loans. I mean, I know they did some things in that regard, but the idea that there's a group out there that's going to award this out, I hope it's not to their friends. I hope it's to the corporations that are most important in terms of employment. But I think the incentive has got to be for those employers to keep their employees on the payroll. And if they're not doing that, and they're doing what they did do after the last bailout, and reward the CEOs and use buybacks, and I know there's some buyback provision, but cash is fungible. And when it goes into the corporation, you can say, well, I didn't use that dollar you gave me, I used this dollar. And so it's hard to police it. And I have some concern about that, but I wish the deficit wasn't as high as it is, and the debt as high as it is under the fiscally irresponsible Republican administration. But having said all of that, I don't see any choice.
Yeah. To that exact point, Nikki, we heard Congressman Jim Banks, who's from the area you cover up in Fort Wayne, he voted against an earlier COVID relief bill, and he referenced the debt as part of the reason that he did that, and now he voted for this one, which, of course, is, you know, exponentially bigger. So, but is it for that exact reason? Is that for the most part, everybody just agrees we need to do this?
Yeah, I think partially also, I mean, that first package was more than a week ago, which sounds like a short amount of time, but the way fast things are moving with this virus and everything that's shut down, I do think that's partially different. And I think he probably heard a little bit from, you know, constituents at home about that vote. But he has been all in on the latest, I guess they call it, phase three bill. So he definitely voted for it today.
As did, I believe, every member of Indiana's delegation, certainly through this process this week. John Schwanes, I wanted to ask you about, with these sorts of stimulus packages, not that we've seen one quite like this ever before in our history, but there's always, I think, from sort of folks, so average Americans, average Hoosiers, am I getting the same kind of help that the big business is getting? And obviously, we want it to be a little balanced, but do you think the average American is looking at what's coming out of Congress now that was passed by the House today and is expected to be signed by the president today as well. Do you think they're going to feel like this is the right balance?
I think to a certain extent, it's a matter of anything is welcome. Again, you have a lot of Hoosiers, a lot of citizens across the country who are struggling, as has been suggested here already, to deal with mortgage payments and grocery bills and all those sorts of day-to-day costs. So I think since all politics is local, I would say that the way people read this bill or react to this bill is all local too. What is it doing for me? There will be plenty of time for it to be dissected in the coming months to say, was this a measure to, you know, give an even better situation to people who already were extremely well off. And at that point, there could be some repercussions if, in fact, that's what happens. But clearly, if you look at this, a lot of the safeguards that are in place in the bill are designed to prevent the buybacks and the bonuses and all those sorts of things. And I think a lot of this, even though clearly this is unprecedented, clearly we've never had to deal with a stimulus package of this sort before, there is some guidance. And I think it's interesting that a lot of people who are in the know on this and are certainly the dollars and cents people in Washington and across the country are looking back to the recession, the Great Recession of 2008, to say, then we didn't react quickly enough. We didn't flood the market with the kind of cash that we think is now needed. And look how long the recovery took to gain traction. So I think right now you're seeing the Federal Reserve, which has made the comment that it's willing to, has the power and the willingness to print infinite amounts of cash and infuse it to, and put it into the marketplace. Again, I don't think that would have happened had we not gone through what we went through back at the end of the, from 2008 to, say, 2009, 2010. In an odd way, maybe we benefited in lessons learned from that bit of hardship as well.
All right. Well, Governor Holcomb this week issued only the second veto of his term, rejecting a controversial bill that would have restricted local municipalities from implementing measures to protect renters. Sheridan reports.
Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb vetoed the bill late Wednesday. In recent weeks, Holcomb joined other leaders around the state in a call to stop eviction and foreclosure proceedings, a move to protect those who face economic challenges because of the coronavirus. The bill passed by the Indiana General Assembly was also contested by municipalities with measures to protect tenants and restrict landlord powers. The measure was added to an unrelated bill late in the session. Indiana has some of the highest eviction rates in the country.
John Schwannes, let me put it this way. If COVID-19 doesn't happen, does Governor Holcomb veto this bill?
Well, he gave us two clues as to the answer to that question. They were somewhat conflicting in his comments about this. He said, first off, that this is just not the right time to pursue something like this, to enact something like this. And then he also said, though, that the language was overly broad, which would suggest to me anyway that it would be overly broad today. It would be overly broad if we were all acting in normal ways without the COVID-19 virus. So I think there you have to parse, find out where in the middle he might come down. And I would point then to history, his own history as governor. He's only vetoed one other bill prior to this one, so he's not exactly doesn't have that pen at the ready, always whipping, his veto signature across bills. So I think his tendency is generally to give deference to lawmakers in the General Assembly. My guess is then that he probably, if I had to guess one way or the other, he probably would have signed it. But again, there was a growing coalition of churches, social groups, local government officials that were pressuring him to veto it. So it's hard to say, because he did give us two clues that run in opposite directions.
Yeah, Nikki, what do you think?
Yeah, I don't think we'll ever know. I do know that he really struggled with it. I think we asked him about it that afternoon, and he said, I got 9 hours left. And he was serious. He said he had gone back and forth and back and forth on it. I did talk to someone in the governor's administration who said the preemption part was a big deal for him. I mean, it virtually said local government could do nothing in the realm of landlord-tenant stuff. And so I think if they try this again next year, that's one area they're definitely going to try to back down from.
Yeah, Ann Delaney, to that point, there were some provisions of this bill that actually put in some protections for tenants in places that had none. But that local preemption language was really broad, is this an idea that will be resurrected in a very different form?
Well, if it gets resurrected, it ought to have an author first. It shouldn't be slipped in at the last minute with no public debate, which is what happened with this. This was a giveaway to the Landlord Association, even out-of-state landlords. I mean, Indianapolis has the second highest eviction rate of any city in the United States of America. What does that tell you about what kind of protections our tenants have? They don't. And this was ill-conceived. I called for its veto last week. He did the right thing in vetoing. Whatever his motivation was, it was the right move, and I would hope not to see this again.
Mike O'Brien, I would imagine it wasn't the overriding factor in this decision, but part of the decision has to be, boy, this would have looked really bad if he hadn't vetoed it, right?
Yeah, this is a peculiar issue in that it pit local government Republicans, home rule Republicans against, you know, and basically put the legislature in the sole right in the driver's seat in landlord-tenant regulation, right? And I'm not sure long-term that they want to be in that business. But certainly the circumstances, we've seen circumstances change in the past, and the legislature pivot, if that's happened during the session, the General Assembly, we saw that with a school shooting with, I think it was Parkland a couple years ago, when there was legislation moving through that would have loosened the right to carry guns around schools or to arm teachers and these types of things. And they put the brakes on that just because of the external circumstances. So it's clearly what's happening in the world does matter with what's happening in the state house. And clearly in the two weeks since the legislature adjourned, the world's changed entirely.
It's hard to believe it's only been 2 weeks since the legislature adjourned.
Longest 2 weeks ever.
all right. So the state says none of the nearly 27,000 inmates at the Indiana Department of Correction facilities have positive cases of COVID-19. But the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette's Nikki Kelly, a familiar name to us, reported this week that that's in part because none of them have been tested. The Journal-Gazette story says the DOC has tested 13 staff members for coronavirus out of more than 5,600 statewide. Some of them tested positive, though the department won't say how many. DOC suspended visitation of prisons 2 weeks ago to limit the possibility of the virus being brought into the facilities. Inmates are getting two free phone calls of up to 5 minutes per week through April 14th. An agency spokesperson says facilities can't accommodate meals of 10 people or less, and that outdoor recreation time is observing the CDC's 6-foot social distancing guideline, quote, as permitted. Nikki Kelly, we heard an update from the Department of Correction Commissioner today at the governor's daily press conference. He said still no positive cases of prisoners, but he still didn't say that they're testing prisoners, right?
Correct. And we know that they're not doing that so far, but they have tested, I think, 13 staff members, and they won't say how many of those are positive, but they are isolating and that kind of thing. Honestly, I did this story because a correctional officer reached out to me and was concerned about them all eating en masse and recreating en masse, and so I was curious about it. And I think now it definitely raises some questions that we'll have to follow as this goes on, given that it's so hard to social distance in those types of areas.
Yeah, John Schwanes, the governor's office faces a dilemma here. The DOC faces a dilemma here between you can't really follow social distancing guidelines when you're required to keep people, a large group of people, in a relatively small space. But is the state doing right by its inmates?
Well, for better or for worse, that's a constituency that doesn't have a lot of clout in the state house. Again, I'm not trying to be flippant. If you look at, as the governor is going about his decision-making here, and he is trying to determine what should we do to try to keep Hoosiers safe throughout this crisis, sure, I'm not suggesting he's wishing ill will upon anybody behind bars, but that seems to be working at this point based on, well, the absence of people going to the, you know, being admitted to the infirmary with this malady. So he might be inclined just to stay the course for fear that perhaps somebody who hasn't been tested, and therefore we don't know that person is in fact positive for exposure to this disease, in fact is released as part of some attempt to thin the prison population temporarily, as some other states have done, and then goes out and sparks some outbreak in some other part of the state where he or she resides when he's not, he or she is not in prison, or commits a crime. That's a lot of attention. So,
Mike, to that very point, Governor Holcomb was asked today whether he's going to plan to release any prisoners who might have very little time left or things like that. He said no, but is that answer going to have to change at some point if we have any sort of outbreak situation?
I think they're making decisions like that based on the circumstances that are in front of them. So if there were large populations or large groups in the prison population who are showing symptoms and getting sick and testing was required in order to get the treatment, then I think they'd probably go that direction.
And Delaney, I'll ask a question that I wanted to start with, which is the state doing right by its inmate population?
I don't think so. Those institutions are like petri dishes. And when you have a large outbreak, the damage is done. It seems to me anybody whose sentence is about to expire or any elderly nonviolent offender would be perfect to try to thin the population out to try to reduce the risk. Yes, you put them out in the public, but they take then the same risk all the rest of us take. But putting them in those close quarters in that situation when guards have been affected and can't be just the ones that have been tested positive who have been exposed is extremely risky, and I think they need to rethink what they're doing with the prison population.
All right. Well, that is Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is here in the studio with me, Democrat Ann Delaney, and at home via Skype, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Stay safe, stay healthy, and join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com. The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.